Research and writing by Pamela Wirth and Kana Tagawa. Our executive producer is Rich Hayes, and I'm your host, Colleen McDonald. Want to make sure you don't miss an episode of the podcast? The easiest way to do that is to subscribe. It's free and easy. Just click on the subscribe button in your favorite podcast app. If you'd like to connect with us, come check us out on Twitter at GotScienceUCS. Thanks. Stay safe, get vaccinated, and see you next time.
KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community, focusing on issues important to Washington County.
Welcome to Inside Washington County. I'm Rob Solomon. Today, we're going to take a look at mental health services in Washington County. We will try to understand what our county needs in mental health and just how Washington County government plays a role. Our guest today is Nick O'Conn, Director of County's Behavioral Health Department, covering both mental health and addictions. The department has a network of community providers who are available to provide support services. County staff provide civil commitment services, protective services, and care coordination. He has held the position for just about a year after working in the county for over 12 years, providing direct services, focusing on youth and later on adults. And now he's the director and he's spending some time with us today. Welcome, Nick, and thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me today, Rob. It's good to see you.
Nice to see you. Let's start at the beginning. Behavioral health. Your department covers mental health and addictions. What is mental health, and how does someone know if they have a mental health problem?
That is a really fantastic question. When we think about mental health, as you mentioned, behavioral health is the combination of both mental health and addiction services. And we talk about addiction, we talk about both substance use disorder and problem gambling services. Specifically with mental health, we look at it as a spectrum of wellness and somebody's ability to cope with the different stressors that might be entering their life at any given time. And the services and supports we put into place for the community is really to be able to support people on that spectrum of wellness if they might be having a hard time coping.
So if we have someone who is dealing with anxiety or depression, there's a number of those people that continue to function in life pretty well. But if that anxiety or depression interferes with their life functioning, that makes it a problem?
So yes, on that spectrum of wellness, if somebody is having trouble coping with their anxiety or depression, it can absolutely become a problem. And what we're hoping to do is to have the supports and a safety net in place to be able to support Washington County community members and help them get back on track with being able to get to their lives and enjoy their families, friends, everything else that they enjoy doing.
By all means, sounds great. Concerning the addiction side of your department, Nick, the state passed Measure 110 and a board has been working on its implementation. Curious, can you tell our listeners how the measure will change the addictions treatment component of behavioral health care in our county and just what progress is being made?
That's actually a really fantastic question. And the state just came out with their request for proposals related to the funds for Measure 110. It's a really incredible opportunity for our state to have a significant amount of money coming in to support infrastructure and service development around addictions treatments and treats folks with substance abuse disorders. And my understanding is there's about $220 million that's going to be coming to the state of Oregon related to this measure to support this, and that the state's working very hard to put what they're calling behavioral health resource networks into each community, which is really a coordinated set of behavioral health services to support folks with addiction. And we're working really closely with our provider network around being able to respond to this proposal.
And the big part of Measure 110 that created even national attention, if not international attention, is just like the government in British Columbia, they're decriminalizing the possession of a number of drugs in order to facilitate entry into treatment. Do you think that's going to change the way the addictions portion of the behavioral health system has been functioning? And if so, is it going to be a good change?
I think it will be a good change. And I think it remains to be seen what that impact is. It's still very new. And we know that community members who are cited with possession have the choice as to whether or not to pay a fine and to engage in treatment or to not. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out as we become more familiar and mature as far as the enforcement of this. And what's going to be really interesting, though, is just the supports that we're able to put in place. And that's what we're really focusing on. Obviously, getting treatment for our community members rather than incarceration is always the preferred outcome, because we want folks to get treatment in qualified providers rather than getting treatment in a jail or another setting where that might not be able to meet their needs as well.
Certainly. And you talk about the infrastructure that will be set up in order to help Measure 110 be successful. And you talk about how it's focused on addictions, which obviously makes sense. But I'm wondering, will the mental health component be able to take advantage of some of that infrastructure as well?
Our goal with services is always to have them be as coordinated as possible. And so with any development of substance use disorder treatment or addictions treatment, we want to ensure that there's coordination and integration with treatment that can be meeting mental health needs as much as possible and or facilitating transitions to ensure that those needs are being met. And so as we're talking with providers, it's really ensuring that obviously this is the issue that is elevated and the need that is elevated around substance use treatment, but we always have mental health in the forefront as well.
Understood. You know, it's interesting that we're talking about services, and sometimes it's pretty confusing for folks to know where to go. How does one know where to seek help when there's private practice providers, nonprofit organizations providing services, and frankly, your department providing some services as well? If I say I have some sort of mental health or substance abuse problem, who do I call?
That's a really fantastic question. We no doubt have a complicated system where we have a set of providers who are treating our community members with commercial insurance. We have providers who are treating our members on enrolled Medicaid or OHP through the coordinated care organizations. And we also operate a network of community providers for folks that are uninsured or underinsured in Washington County. The best thing to do is, if you are on private insurance, you can absolutely contact your insurance to see how you can access their behavioral health network and their host of providers. Mm-hmm. If you're on Medicaid, similarly, you can absolutely contact your Medicaid CCO to see what their host of providers are. If you're just not sure and you need help, we have a host of services that are available for the entire community. And one of those is that we have a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week crisis service, a line that is set up and operated by Multnomah County. That number is 503-291-9111. Folks can call at any time if them or a loved one are having a behavioral health crisis, and they can actually help support you in the moment and also help connect you to services as well. We also have a mental health urgent care center that supports behavioral health needs in our community that's available to all members of our community.
The Hawthorne Walk-In Center.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's Hawthorne without an E. And folks can learn more about their hours and how they operate at hawthornewalkin.com with no E.
Excellent. And that's a really good rundown, but I've got one point of confusion. It's troubled me for a number of years, and I've wanted to ask somebody. When you say if you have insurance, you can call your insurance company and see what providers you can go and see to, and that's great. Most nonprofits that I know that provide services would welcome insurance clients, and most of them are able to take the insurance. Why shouldn't we be steering folks towards those poor nonprofits that are dependent on grants and minimal fees, et cetera? If you could clarify that for me, I'd be grateful.
Yeah, I can do the best I can to clarify that for you, given that I don't work in one of the nonprofits. But my understanding is that there are some of the nonprofits aren't able to bill commercial insurance because oftentimes commercial insurance requires a specific licensure in order to bill, is my understanding. And it's often hard for the nonprofits to retain employees that that hold a licensure or continue to practice with them after they obtain their licensure. So I want to be able to support our community mental health providers as much as possible. And I just can't speak on behalf of all of them as far as what sort of insurances they do and don't do or don't accept.
Understood. And thank you. And again, a few phone calls can clarify it for a prospective client. According to your website, you guys seem to have a goal that's awfully tough to meet. If I may quote from the site, "Our goal is that all Washington County residents will have ready access to necessary high-quality behavioral health services appropriate to their level of need." Given that statement, I'd like to take a before and during look at how well the system of private nonprofit and government have been doing at meeting the needs of county residents. First, before the pandemic hit some 20 months ago, how would you say the service delivery system with those three components, including your department, of course, has been functioning?
Before the pandemic, I think that we were doing a very, very nice job, meeting the needs. We're collaborating very closely with our CCO partners to maintain a network both for enrolled Medicaid clients and also for our uninsured and underinsured clients that we're responsible for as a community mental health program. Obviously, the last 20 months have been very, very interesting, both in relation to behavioral health need and also the subsequent impacts that it's had on our behavioral health provider network. I would say over the past 20 months, we've had a number of community members that have had a very, very difficult time related to this pandemic, where we have had a lot of folks that have suffered personal loss of loved ones and also loss of the things that they used to love to do. And subsequently, we've seen anxiety and depression rates go up, and we've seen more complicated presentations for our community members who are engaging in community mental health services. And so, Our ability to meet that need right now is that we have services and supports in place, and folks might just need to wait a little bit longer because of one, the higher level of need, and also some of the workforce impacts that we've had over the last 20 months.
Understood. With the powerful impact of the pandemic, what did you guys learn about the system? In other words, what did the pandemic reveal that you didn't know before?
Well, we always knew it, but it really revealed how hard and incredible our behavioral health providers are. They didn't skip a beat as far as adjusting to virtual treatments and continuing to see our community members when, at the height of the pandemic, when folks still didn't exactly know what was going on and how this was all going to be playing out, which we still don't. We've also learned that humans are resilience, and also that it's okay to not always be resilient, and it's okay to not always be okay. And that, when we're experiencing anxiety, when we're experiencing depression, it's okay to reach out and ask for help. And I think that we're still learning how much need there's going to be as far as people reaching out for help now. And we've learned a lot just about how folks are functioning, how folks are able to cope in very, very difficult circumstances, and are just starting to learn about what the need on the back end of this is going to look like.
Given the increased demands for service during the pandemic, and we're still in it, so I'm not going to say after, so someday it'll be after, but right now I think we're still in it. So given the increased demand and also the necessary protocols that were put in place, how did the county have to adjust its service delivery models, both direct services and with your expectations of those contractors, in order to meet those pandemic conditions? What kind of adjustments did you guys have to make?
A lot of our provider network adjusted to working remotely when and if possible. And so a lot of the outpatient therapy that was occurring in an office moved to virtual platforms. That being said, there's a lot of services and supports that we're not able to move virtually. And so we have our crisis clinic at Hawthorne has moved to greeting people outside of the building and using our conference room so there's more space to distance as they're seeing folks. Just ensuring that there's plenty of room and waiting rooms, different things along those lines. Similarly, our more community-based treatment providers, our assertive community treatment and other more intensive case management programs have continued to see folks in the community throughout, and they're taking all necessary safety precautions. And there was a lot of close coordination with the county early on to ensure that they had the appropriate PPE and other equipment necessary to be able to see our community members safely.
Cool. Has there been, and is there now, equal access to services across the diverse ethnic and racial groups that make up a large percentage of our population? Do you see racism in the system?
Do I see racism in the system? I don't see it personally, but I can't deny or say whether or not that is there. I think that's a hard question to ask, and it's something that I don't see in my day-to-day practice. And I'm not practicing as a clinician. What we've done is our very best to engage community members and to engage a provider network that is able to meet the very diverse needs of our population. Washington County is the most diverse county in the state of Oregon, and we recognize that. And we recognize that we need to ensure that there's a service network in place that's going to meet everybody's needs. Specifically, when COVID started, we launched a series of COVID community counseling programs, which were specifically tailored short-term treatment providers that would support our community members in relation to their behavioral health needs as a result of the pandemic. And we wanted to make sure that we were contracting with our culturally specific provider network and ensuring that those services and supports that were free, no cost to any community members and were insurance blind were available in multiple languages.
And that's excellent. I don't doubt that your outreach efforts are, you know, as solid as they can be. I'm just concerned because there's been a lot of reports about how difficult accessing various healthcare services have been across the country during the pandemic for brown and black people. And so that's why I brought up the question about how that applies here in Washington County. And I do believe that it does apply in the access for various health services that were pushed to the limit by COVID. And that's why I was asking about mental health, if you saw any difficulties in reaching those diverse populations. Again, I've seen a lot of outreach efforts, but so many of those populations are suspicious of terms like behavioral health and mental health. Do you think you're doing a good job of reaching them? I just have to be direct.
I appreciate you being direct, and I think that we're doing the best job we can today, and we can continue to do better. And I think that we see disproportionate impacts of the pandemic, and we also see disproportionate impacts as far as penetration of different communities. And unfortunately, we don't necessarily have Black and brown community members accessing treatment at the same levels as dominant culture community members a lot of the time. And so we need to continue to have this be at the forefront of what we're doing, and we absolutely recognize that.
Thank you. I understand that mental health treatment centers for children have one major problem: finding employees. They've suffered from a chronic workforce shortage for years, but the pandemic made it even worse. Is it really bad in our county? Is there a lack of beds, inpatient beds for kids? And what about adults?
So in our county, we don't have inpatient beds for kids. And so we have an inpatient hospital. Beds for youth are located at Unity Center in Multnomah County and also at Providence Willamette Falls in Clackamas County. And our residential facilities that are they're managed and accessed statewide are located in Corvallis at the Children's Farm Home, and also Perry Center, and located in Multnomah County. Absolutely, what you're saying is that there's been a historic workforce shortage, and that has only become more pronounced over the last 20 months. We've heard a lot about reduced capacity, and we've also heard about potential need to deploy the National Guard to staff the state hospital level of care for both youth and adolescents. And so this is a serious issue. There's been a lot of media on this issue. We've been working very closely with both our providers, but also our community partners, because this is impacting the behavioral health needs of the community, but also it's impacting other systems like juvenile justice and child welfare, who are our partners as well. And so we're actively working and collaborating on this, and recognize that these impacts have been severe.
And, you know, for decades, there's been a shortage of psychiatric services, which are generally in our county and our state, and not even in the nation. And psychiatric services are so necessary when people struggling need medications. Are we doing any better at accessing psychiatric services in Washington County?
I'm hearing more and more about this continuing to be a challenge, and I'm also hearing about providers both locally and statewide getting more innovative as far as their use of telepsychiatry to support the needs. And so this is one of the really nice benefits that we have all become a little bit more adept to treating our clients and our community members through virtual means. And there's been a lot of ability to help access psychiatric care through virtual means. Obviously, that's not accessible to all of our community members, both because of an internet availability gap and some of the severity of symptoms that our community members have. But I've heard about folks indeed getting innovative in this area. Obviously, you can never have too many psychiatrists or providers of medication at this point. It's been a long overdue need and a gap in our service area for a long time. Folks are always trying to both recruit and retain, but I have heard a lot of innovation in this area.
I think there has to be. Sometimes you're using internal medicine folks who are willing to do it, but a lot of non-psychiatric physicians are leery of getting involved. You talk about an influx of maybe 220 or 200 million or so into the system. How's that going to be allocated? Generally speaking, how are you going to use the new monies?
Well, the monies, there's actually a very large amount of money coming into the behavioral health system right now due to multiple investments from the legislature. I spoke in particular about the $220 million related to Measure 110, and that's going to be distributed statewide by an RFP process that's going to be facilitated by the Oregon Health Authority. There are multiple other investments that are really, really exciting as well that are coming into the system. Investments to support our community members who are who have behavioral health needs and have touched the courts but are unable to aid and assist in their own defense. We have large investments coming to our community around mobile crisis services, which are very exciting, and also a pretty large infrastructure investment of close to $140 million from the state of Oregon to build residential and secure residential treatment facilities, also other supported housing facilities for folks with behavioral health needs across the state. And so this legislative session in 2021 was really a landmark investment in behavioral health, and everybody is eager to see this money start to flow into communities, and also are recognizing that right now we need to find the bodies to do the work. And so we are actively working on the workforce efforts as well to ensure that we are able to direct these valuable, valuable dollars to supporting our community members.
Well, given the influx of so many dollars, and I'm very pleased to hear that it's more than I had originally thought, I'm kind of wondering, what do you think needs to be done, whether it's money or attitude changes, whatever, to improve the efficacy of the system? I'm not saying it's not efficient, but any system can be improved. What needs to happen to improve the behavioral health care system in Washington County?
Well, first and foremost, we need to continue our efforts to recruit and retain a workforce just to meet what the demand is. And with that, what we've been advocating for in that area is really to have increased funding for the system, which we're getting, but to have it be directed in a way that we can increase wages for our employees, to really look at ways to reduce the administrative burden on the employees that are in the workforce so that we can retain them and they can spend all of their time and talents on supporting our community members as much as possible. And outside of that, really ensuring that we're building a system that's meeting the needs of all of our community members, as you were saying. And I think that it's really a collaborative effort across systems, across providers, across funders to have a comprehensive set of service arrays that are going to meet the needs of all community members.
Thank you. When you look at the system as a whole and the part specifically that your department plays in the system, of what are you most proud?
There's so many things that I'm proud of. I'm so proud of our staff. I'm so proud of our relationships with our community partners, from our relationships with our school districts to our sheriff's office to our child welfare office. There's such a collaborative sense of us and we when we're doing this work together with our partners in this community, and it's one of the reasons I've loved working here so much. I don't know if that's felt in every community across the states. And I'm so proud that we've not only built those relationships, but continued to maintain them, and that we're seen as a valuable partner in this system. I'm just proud too every day about the work that our employees are doing. They are continuing to support our community members during a vulnerable time, under very difficult circumstances in their own lives. And it's been really inspiring to watch over the last 20 months.
No pandemic joke intended here, but I find your excitement and enthusiasm infectious. I want to thank you very much, Nick, for the time you spent with us today. To our listeners, mental health, behavioral health, it's really important. Is it more important now because of the pandemic than it's ever been? I don't know. I think it's always been important, and it's really cool to know that there's collaboration involved in the delivery of services in the care of our community. Once again, Nick, thank you. And to our listeners, send your comments and questions to me. It's just simple. rob@insidewashco.org. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Mark Berry.
are tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Radio in San Francisco. This is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, we continue our drumbeat reporting on the brutal treatment of thousands of immigrants by the Biden administration. The systematic brutality includes beatings, torture, and forced deportations. Also, we continue our election crimes bulletin as Greg Palast reports on a special grand jury convened to investigate potential illegal Trump election crimes in Georgia. Meanwhile, neo-Nazi radio jock Alex Jones testifies and takes the fifth.